That brief piece was Paul Chihara's third Bagatelle, subtitled Twice Seven Haiku. And that number actually has a full haiku that I can read for its title. The haiku reads, "Fleeting fireflies, seldom seen in reflection after the rainstorm." Welcome to Relevant Tones. I'm Stephen Anthony Rawson, and I'm here with Seth Bosted. And we are celebrating National Haiku Day.
Yay.
Yeah, had no idea that this was a thing, honestly.
After Pi Day, National Haiku Day is my favorite.
We've got a wonderful selection of haikus that we've got together and talked about things that interesting ways that composers have chosen to approach the poetic form of the haiku. And so you're going to hear a lot of music and you're going to hear a lot of poetry from the both of us today. I want to let you know that you can also become a subscriber on Patreon and follow us at patreon.com/relevanttones. And for just $5 a month, you can become a subscriber and you can get lots of bonus content from Relevant Tones. It's just the price of a coffee. And we'd love to have you come find us on there.
All right, let's launch into National Haiku Day. Well, I don't know about you, but I found there was just a wealth of stuff out there. I mean, the haiku form has inspired so many musicians and composers. It was amazing.
Yeah, I felt the same way. I felt like it's not always an opportunity when we have a theme to pick and choose, like from so many things. So
Yeah, exactly.
I think it's an opportunity too for people who I don't know how many people actually write in. Do people write in?
It happens. Oh yeah, it happens.
I want to find I want to have people tell us their hidden gems.
Yeah, definitely. What was so we were talking a little bit before we started taping about how like there's some obvious choices in this universe, but you were looking for unusual haikus or unusual treatments, right? Like what was your approach?
My approach was really to find things that kind of struck me as like, huh, like I wouldn't really have expected that to be the treatment of this haiku. I think maybe the biggest one for me was John Tavener. John Tavener has worked with a few different haikus, has had some pieces, and is really known as being, for the most part, a secular, or I'm sorry, a sacred choral composer. And I think he's kind of one of those love him or hate him kind of people, and I'm in the love him camp. But he has this piece called Butterfly Dreams, and it's there are several haikus that are set to SSAATTBB octet. So the first one, and I think it's great to actually hear these haikus before we listen to the piece because it's a little hard to understand what's being sung. And I didn't understand the first several times I listened to them until I actually got my hands on the haiku. I'm like, oh, okay, got it. So the first one we'll listen to, it's over the Dianthus Sea, a white butterfly whose soul I wonder. All right, the next selection is Butterfly in My Hand, as if it were a spirit, unearthly, insubstantial.
Thank you.
And the last one I want to listen to is definitely a departure from the other two, and you'll notice it right away. And I really think that Taverner did an interesting job of capturing the image of this haiku. So the haiku is, "The flying butterfly, I feel myself a creature of dust." What I loved about these haikus, what really struck me, is it just seemed like you've got this Western sacred choral music tradition really coming into contact with, you know, Eastern haiku. And it just created this really interesting sonic scape for me. It really hit me in this interesting way. And it kind of got me thinking about what Taverner is trying to kind of get at in terms of a kind of universal spirituality or something like that in this composition.
Do you know who wrote the haiku?
I really wish I did. I could not find information. I was this close to buying the score.
You know, we should probably mention like the traditional Japanese haiku has 17 syllables, right? But those are the Japanese syllables, the kirigi, or however you pronounce that word, which are different than syllables in English. And so a lot of people have chosen, because if you add up the syllables of the haiku that you just read, they're not always 17. So a lot of folks when writing haiku in English have chosen to not be so pedantic about the number 17.
Yeah, I've been actually really curious about that and what you found for haikus too, the act of translating them. You know, I found most of the ones I found are in English, not all of them, but are in English in our translations.
You're right about the translation. I mean, that started when you were translating from Japanese to English, and you're like, oh, the syllable count will never be the same because the languages are so incredibly different, you know? So what should we do? Should we just really worry about these syllables, or should we try to capture the beauty and majesty of this poem?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. I actually found a little later on, we're going to hear two different translations that I found of a haiku, and I think they read a little bit differently, each of them. It's actually by a Greek poet, not a Japanese poet, but we have two different translations, and this poem has been set many, many times, I found.
That's great. I'm gonna play a piece by Lisa Neher, who's a composer that actually ACM has worked with a couple of times, and I was really pleased to see that she had haiku. And she says, my family has many ties to Japan. Two of my uncles spent many years there, one training in Zen Buddhism and another studying Chinese philosophy, marrying my aunt Yoko and beginning their family in Toyohashi. Growing up before the email age, we wrote letters back and forth and got so excited when we saw an envelope in the mail with an international stamp on it. I was drawn to these three haiku by their emotional content and striking natural imagery. So they're all by Basho, and the piece is called Three Basho Haiku. And I'm going to read them. So Harvest Moon is the first. Harvest Moon, rising to my gate, the cresting tide. So I love that one. I love the way he shifts the imagery from the moon to the tide. What is the tide there? That's just a fascinating poem. It's so short and yet really evocative imagery.
Makes me think too of the relationship the harvest moon and the tide have at the beginning and the end. There's this beautiful kind of completeness to it in a way too.
And yet it's the moon that's rising to his gate, not
Yeah.
the tide. Perhaps the water is sweeping the light, the moonlight up to the gate, or perhaps the gate is symbolic. I don't know. I mean, that's what's so great about haiku.
It's GAIT gate.
GAITE.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, I mean, and again, these, you know, Basho lived a long time ago, and these were
Yeah.
translated. The second poem she set is called First Winter Rain. Just for today, let's grow old together. First Winter Rain.
Let's go together.
Another beautiful poem. And the third is this fragrance. I don't know which tree's blossom it comes from, this fragrance.
I think it's really interesting when, like, reading a haiku, you can sit with it for such a long time, and translating that into music can be quite a challenge. We typically like things that, you know, are bigger, and I found so many short pieces, right, that deal with haiku, and I haven't found a ton that will kind of sit with the poem for an extended period of time.
Oh yeah, that's interesting. I think, you know, I set 5 haiku that I wrote myself years ago, and I remember my teacher telling me that there was a flaw in the 5 pieces, which was that they all followed the same format, that you heard music for about, you know, a minute and a half, 2 minutes, and then there was like a pause, and then you heard more music. And I think she's right. Like, I could have changed that up, but at the same time, I was following that haiku form where the third line reveals something new about the first two, you know, but I do understand hearing 5 of that in a row could be a bit much. It's interesting because if you're going to set a haiku, first of all, you have to decide if you're going to actually set the text or if you're going to be inspired by it in another way. Then secondly, you have to decide, are you going to, I mean, the first word anybody thinks of with haiku is short. So, okay, are you going to follow that rule? Or are you going to do what you're talking about and actually ponder the haiku in a much larger form, you know? And I know a lot of composers don't do that because, you know, people are going to be like, hey, it's supposed to be a haiku. Those are short. Why are you writing this 17-minute piece? And it's like, because there's so much to think about. It's such dense imagery in such a short form. But there's a lot of other things to think about too. I mean, you know, like John Cage, who we may play later, inspired by Japanese and Chinese philosophy, you know, and just kind of the images that haiku bring up of this very different society, you know? So yeah, there's a lot of ways to go. Let's do a piece of yours that you brought in.
Sure. Well, why don't we do one more choral piece? I found this, to be a really interesting piece. I hadn't heard it before this past few weeks. This is Libby Larson's May Sky. This is using haikus. I want to make sure I get this right. This is drawing from a collection of haikus that were put into an anthology by Japanese and Japanese Americans during who were interned in the camps out west. And the title for the piece comes from a haiku by Neiji Ozawa that reads, "From the window of despair, May sky, there is always tomorrow." And it's something that I really enjoy. It's a slightly longer piece, but it is a collection of a few different haikus. And Libby Larson is channeling a lot of different emotions and through these haikus and into the music, and using a lot of different extended techniques or vocalizations to evoke a lot of the different images in the poems.
Thank you.
All right, that's music by Libby Larson. And if you're just tuning in somehow, which I don't even know how you would do that in the podcast era, pretty much everybody starts at the beginning, but we are celebrating National Haiku Day. I'm here with Stephen Anthony Rawson and finding some really great music that I had never heard any of this music before except the John Cage. So this really opened my ears a lot. I certainly had not heard that Libby Larson before. So yeah.
Yeah, brand new one for me too. And I think I had a lot of fun. I like to do research. It's an enjoyable thing for me. And I found the actual anthology that Libby had when she was looking through this and reading some of these poems. And there's a great, bit of detail on kind of the history of haiku in early 20th century America, particularly Japanese and Japanese Americans having haiku clubs out west, and these master haiku poets disseminating their knowledge, and how the tradition of the haiku had kind of changed to become more individualistic and kind of radical when coming to America, which I thought was really fascinating.
I feel like in the West, we lament the fact that so much life is transitory, right? We're seeking eternal heaven. We're seeking permanence and stability. And Japan and the haiku celebrate intransigence, you know?
Yeah. And it makes sense with the brevity of it, going back to what we were talking about a little bit earlier. Even it makes that musical moment too, if in its brevity, very special, right? If you were listening, you might have missed it otherwise.
Exactly. All right. I found a piece that I did not know existed. It's by Ursula Mamlock, and it's called A Leaf is Falling. It's for flute and soprano. The soprano is Toni Arnold, and flute is Claire Chase. And I'll read the poem. It's by a poet called Ransetsu, who I had not heard of. A leaf is falling. Alas, alas, another. And another falls. All right, what have you got for us?
Yeah, this is a piece by James Falzone, who I got to speak with recently, and we actually featured on Relevant Tones in February. And we didn't get the opportunity to talk about this piece, even this album. So this is one of James's groups called the Renga Ensemble. And it's from the album The Room Is, which I've got here because it's got liner notes, which are fantastic. Please, everybody, keep releasing albums with liner notes. I want them. The entire album is based on a single haiku by Anita Virgil. And I'll read the haiku now, and then I'll talk a little bit about it. So the haiku, Anita Virgil, not seeing, the room is white. Until that red apple. So that's the whole poem. Beautiful. And what James and Renga Ensemble have done is they take that haiku apart, and each track on the album is a different part of it. So there's a track called Not Seeing. The room is white until that red apple. It's broken up into these lengthy pieces that really explore each facet of the haiku. And I found that really fascinating, and I really haven't seen many people look at the haiku that way.
Yeah, that's a really cool idea.
And it's also interspersed, each of these longer movements, with these Renga musical pieces, which Renga is then another literary, I actually heard in the liner notes it described as a kind of collaborative haiku. So there's these collaborative improvisations on the album that feature a different member of the sextet, the wind sextet that is Renga Ensemble, in between. And I feel like it's just quite a beautiful album, but I'd really like to share the track The Room Is from this album.
Great. Oh, that sounds amazing. I love that idea of again, each subsequent line gives you so much more information in the haiku. So to take, they're almost taking each word apart, it sounds like in the tracks. I mean, not quite, but they're, they're not just going line by line though, right? I mean, they're like subdividing it in really interesting ways and then exploring those different universes.
I like that about how we do that with a lot of poetry we read. We can, when we get to the end of the line, we can just take all the information we get from just that line and create some kind of idea. And then the next line, okay, something new or something different, and just building on it. And to look at it piece by piece like that, I enjoy a lot.
Well, it's so interesting because music is very similar. There's a lot of times I'm listening to a piece of music and thinking, okay, it's really interesting. I don't totally get it. Not sure that I like the piece. And then you hear the ending, and something happens in the ending that sheds light on everything I heard before. And I'm like, wow, that's really cool. Now I have to listen to it again. Now that I know what the ending is, and it's exactly like poetry where you're unveiling meaning. It's just happening musically.
Is it okay if I share? It just there's this little tidbit in the liner notes that are like the liner notes end with a unique haiku about woodwind instruments that I just like a lot.
Yeah.
The haiku is sound coming up, the ground, and the bottom of the horn.
was I gonna play? Oh yeah, this was kind of interesting. So there's a composer named Stephen Melillo who I had not heard of, and he specializes in wind music, like wind band, writes a lot of wind band music. And he has a whole album called Musical Haikus. Now, they don't relate to any actual haikus. He's just thinking about music that might conjure up a haiku. So, you know, the haiku itself, what is being discussed, what is happening, what that third line is that reveals something new, that's up to you. When you listen to the music, you can fill all of that in. In a way, the only description you get is from the title and from the music itself. And I thought, like, I listened to several of them. I listened to some of his other band music, and I just thought, wow, okay, this guy really knows how to write for band, which is, you know, obviously a big thing. Not something I do as a composer, but I know that a lot of people is, you know, there's tons and tons of band music out there, but it doesn't sound like band music, you know? Like, he's really thinking about color. He's really thinking about the overall sound. And so I thought they were pretty cool. I'm going to just do one of them. And it's called No One Knows. So this is No One Knows from the album Musical Haikus by composer Stephen Melillo. I was really interested in you that you brought in Dai Fuchikura, because that's a composer I got way into like maybe 20 years ago and haven't really kept up. So I was like, oh, wow, okay. Dai Fuchikura wrote a piece inspired by haiku.
He didn't.
Oh, okay.
I did something a little different on this. So I can explain and we can decide if we want to include these last two pieces. I picked a haiku or two to pair with a piece of music that wasn't about haiku, to as kind of an, you know, I don't know. I thought it was an interesting kind of experiment.
Yeah, I love that idea. So you chose a haiku and then you chose a piece of music you thought like kind of fit the same vein, or how did you do that?
Yeah, or, you know, could, I think, or could open up some, you know, interesting interpretive kind of things. But I did stick with, you know, from the title and listening to the piece a few times, you know, reading quite a few haikus to try to find one that I felt kind of fit. And this one is, so yeah, Dai Fujikura's Touch of Breeze is a really interesting piece because, and I believe this is right, it was the first piece that he wrote for Japanese instruments, not only Japanese instruments, but the show is featured in it. And I was really drawn to that sound, as we'll hear when thinking about this, paired with the cello, and there's another instrument in there as well. It's a trio. Sorry, but I want to read the poem. So these are translations by a Greek poet, and I found two different translations. And I think they're a little different reading them. So the first one reads, "Night, the wind, separation, spreads and undulates." All right, and I'll read the other translation. "Darkness, the wind, divorce, spreads and moves in waves." So I like that the word choice is just subtly different, but it made me rethink the haiku a little bit when I heard the word divorce. It felt different to me from separation, and separating darkness and the wind, or divorcing them. I don't know. I really like this poem. This is by a Greek poet, George Sepphoris, which I'm not sure if I'm saying correctly, but.
And I mean, undulates is so different than moves.
Yeah.
Undulates.
Yeah.
That's the final word of the poem too. I mean, so that like that really sticks in your mind, you know, whereas I think in the other translation, yeah, you're right. Divorce is what sticks in your mind, you know, such a strong word.
I think it was the image of spreading and undulating that reminded me of Touch of Breeze, this piece. I had fun with this last one. What can I say? I chose a piece that I've really enjoyed, and for a long time, by one of my favorite composers, who is no longer living. This is Toru Takemitsu, guitar concerto called Toward the Sea, and just the second movement, which I've always felt sounds like a musical haiku, in many ways. Just listening to it, it has that way of unfolding in brevity. It's just alto flute and guitar. The whole orchestra is, pared down to this combination. And the title of the second movement is Moby Dick. So there's so much there already. And I kind of had a fun time trying to find some haikus that I thought paired nicely with this. And I chose two different composers, or two different poets rather, both American. The first is Philip Appleman, and the second is Jack Kerouac, and I'd like to read them both together. So, clouds murmur darkly. It is a blinding habit, gazing at the moon. Racing westward through the clouds in the howling wind, the moon.
Well, I brought in one more, which, you know, at the top of the show, I was saying was kind of an obvious choice, but it's probably only an obvious choice for weirdos like us who love haiku and you know, contemporary classical music. But John Cage wrote a piece called Seven Haiku, and it was one of the early pieces he used where they wrote using the I Ching method. So it's the entire piece has been derived by chance. And if you don't know much about John Cage, I personally feel that he kind of pushed musical experimentation about as far as it can go, because if the music has been derived by chance, or if the music is mostly silence and the sounds that you're hearing are just the sounds that are naturally happening in the given environment, well, I don't know how you experiment much more than that. And that's kind of a really good thing, because, you know, after Cage did all the things that he did, it really opened us up to, first of all, the idea that sound around us is music, that we're surrounded by music. And secondly, that, you know, we composers don't have to be obsessed with experimentation so much anymore. You know, like, we can go back to self-expression. So yeah, this idea that everything around us is music, though, is very much like the same philosophy of haiku. So I was interested in that. Again, they're not inspired by specific haiku. In fact, each one is a person. Each of the seven is dedicated to a person. And he says each haiku is built around three measures of 5, 7, and 5/4 notes. So he does the syllables that way with quarter notes. And as always with Cage, silence plays an essential role in these pieces. These are really short, so we can hear them all. This is Seven Haiku by John Cage. Relevant Tones is a production of Access Contemporary Music, a nonprofit organization with the mission of providing equitable access to the transformative power of music making. Today's episode is National Haiku Day, and for Relevant Tones, I'm Seth Bosted.
And I'm Stephen Anthony Rawson.
Thank you so much for listening.